Hi everyone, welcome to the lecture on natural language processing and in particular NLP in the context of the electronic health record. My name is Noemi El-Haddad. I'm a faculty in the Department of Biomedical Informatics at Columbia. I am trained as a computer scientist and my research expertise is in natural language processing, and I in particular investigate how to apply NLP to improve health. So let's get started with a few learning objectives. By the end of this lecture, you guys should be able to answer the following question. First of all, what is natural language processing, both in the general domain and in particular in the clinical realm? And so, you know, you should be able to answer questions about why NLP is a particularly important technology for medicine and for the electronic health record in particular. And then you should be able to also answer questions that are a little bit more in depth about natural language processing, such as what are the forms of knowledge and what types of techniques are used by clinical NLP. And finally, you should be able to answer questions about the challenges that are entailed in building a clinical NLP application and the ways to evaluate clinical NLP tools. These two parts questions at the end are particularly important because, as you'll notice when we go through the lecture, NLP is very much an active research topic as opposed to an established technology. And so if you find yourself as a user of NLP, say in the EHR, you should be able to identify very quickly what challenges there are and how to assess the quality of an NLP tool so that it answers exactly your needs. So let's start with a general question of what is natural language processing. It's a subfield of the general field of artificial intelligence, and I'm sure you've heard the term AI before in science fiction movies or books, but also in our general everyday life. The hope of AI, and in particular NLP, is to build programs and tools or machines that understand and or generate language like humans. Interestingly, NLP was one of the first tasks tackled by researchers at the beginning of AI, which happened in the mid-50s. And I have to say, researchers at the time were a little bit naive, and maybe they were thinking, well, it's so easy for humans to understand or generate language, it's not going to be that hard for computers to replicate or simulate these tasks. And so there was this great enthusiasm from AI researchers for what was called at the time computational linguistics or natural language processing. And the idea was that all we need to do is encode within the computer different rules about the way language works, and we'll very soon be able to have tools that, for example, can translate from Russian to English automatically. Well, it turns out it was not that easy, and 60, 70 years later, we're still working really hard at it. One of the main discovery was that language, which, you know, if you're a linguist, is not such a new discovery, but that language is a complex phenomenon. And one of them is, one of the difficulties of language is that it's extremely ambiguous. And so what happens is that we as humans actually go through incredibly complex inferences while we listen or while we generate language in order to understand each other. And in order to encode all of these rules in a machine so that ambiguity can be resolved, it turned out to be quite unfeasible. And so for many years, computational linguistics were kind of a field that where people were really enthusiastic about it, but it was not, it didn't have a lot of advances. Now, very recently, as you all know, there was a big change in technology, which is that we had a lot of texts available to us now through the web. And suddenly there was a renewed interest in NLP as more and more texts were available. And there was a renewed interest as well because there are new needs for people. And one of them is what's called the information overload. So, you know, as we go on the web, there's just too much information for us to read. We need help. And so can computers go and process all of the information that's on the web and help us do tasks like finding information, reading news quite quickly without having to go through many newspapers, or again, translate information from one language to another. And today, we are finding that through the use of statistical methods, we can actually make quite a lot of progress in natural language processing. And so today, if you can use a search engine like Google, it's in part because of that these advances in the field. I want to emphasize throughout that this is still a very much an active field of research, and it's an interesting field of research because it draws from many, many different areas of research, such as linguistics, computer science, because we have to at the end implement technology, but also what's called data science, which is the use of really large sets of text or data in order to learn patterns of use. So if we focus now on natural language processing for medicine and health, it's not surprising that researchers have been thinking of, you know, ways to impact health with technology, and there's been a very long tradition of applying AI to medicine. So you can think of the first example of such activities being expert systems that were, the goal was to diagnose patients based on a set of rules that was encoded in a system, and those were the beginning of the field. And today, the latest example, which takes a very different approach to expert systems, is IBM Watson for medicine, where it's actually the same goal, it's to diagnose patients, but no, we don't have rules anymore, but instead we have knowledge that's derived automatically from very large amounts of textual data. And so this is where the data science part comes into account, which is quite different from the type of science that was required for expert systems at the beginning of AI applied to medicine. So as there is this long tradition and it's not solved in any way, and we all have the same goals, you know, diagnose patients, helping physicians diagnose patients with automated tools, we also note that there is an increasingly overwhelming amount of text available for physicians. So you can think of all the patient notes in the electronic health record that a physician has to go through. You can think of all the clinical literature that's available in PubMed that scientists have to go through every day in order to stay up to date with what's going on in research. You can also think of all the amount of information generated by the patients themselves when they talk to each other on the web, and especially web 2.0 type of applications. And so if we are trying to help medicine and health through NLP applications, the question really becomes, how can we help leveraging all of this information? And so you can think of NLP's goal as going from natural text, and the text is often very noisy, has a lot of idiosyncrasies, has a lot of sub-language that different audiences use, so patients talk very differently from clinicians, who talk yet again very differently from scientists, and all of the ambiguities that are inherent to language, and how to process all of this text and to put it into a format that is amenable to computing, so that we can then go through all of this large amount of information as a computer and just learn patterns, for example, so that we can diagnose a patient. So let me focus for a moment on the electronic health record, since this is the topic of this lecture. I just want to remind you guys of the complexity of the electronic health record. There's a lot of different types of information that are captured. Some are very structured in nature, such as billing codes, which represent diagnoses, or time series of laboratory results. Medications, depending on the EHR, could be present in the free text of the EHR or as a structured information and as part of codes as well. There are also reports, so you can think of radiology reports and such things, which are typically quite well structured, so they have a very established flow to the documents. And also notes written by the different clinicians, such as physicians, nurses, social workers, etc. And here we have, depending on the EHR, we can find free text or a mix of structured and narrative text in the form of a template. I also want to remind you that The information that's entered in the electronic health record is often entered for many different purposes. Obviously, there's a clinical purposes of, you know, clinician documenting the patient information, but there's obviously other purposes such as legal purposes, billing and administrative purposes, as well as compliance purposes. And the reason I'm saying all of this is that it actually adds to the complexity of the phenomenon here. We're not only processing text that is written for documenting a clinical text, a clinical case. And obviously the other part is that while there is a lot of information available in the EHR, NLP is only going to focus on reports and notes, but we can keep in our mind that other types of information can help us understand better what's written in reports and notes. And so diagnoses, lab results, medication, etc., can help us disambiguate maybe what is written in notes and reports. So I couldn't resist adding here a picture of a patient record from, I think this is from definitely 1800 something, end of the 1800s. And this is a picture given to me by Eugenia Siegler, who researches historical medical cases. This whole text here is actually two different patients, so it's been anonymized. And this used to be all the information that was needed about a patient record. And obviously, no, it has changed. And I just want to give you here some numbers at New York Presbyterian to give you an example of how much information is available in the electronic health record. And you should think about these numbers with respect to this phenomenon of information overload. So if we look at patients with a diagnosis of congestive heart failure and the diagnosis was given between 2008 and 2010, right now at New York Presbyterian, there are 17,000 patients that have an ICD-9 code for CHF. And for these 17 and some thousand patients, there are more than 3,800,000 notes. And so that means that on average, each patient has around 225 notes. Interestingly, there are 500 patients that have more than 1,000 notes in this data set. That's fairly large. I mean, it would take a long time for a physician to go through an individual patient record. And it's kind of accepted at this point that physicians do not have the time to go through all of this information. And so the worry here is, of course, if there's all this information entered in the EHR, but no one has time to read it all, we need help from maybe an NLP or an information retrieval system to help us identify what's important in there. Other numbers, just as comparison, patients with a diagnosis of lupus, we have less patients in there. In our institution, we have 1,600 patients, sorry, and on average, they have 142 notes per patient. So even for diseases that require maybe a little bit less care, at least less intensive care, there's still quite a lot of information entered. Okay, so what are the different applications that we can think of? How can NLP help medicine and health in the context of text mining and understanding what's written and available to us humans? So one is connected to biomedical knowledge. So the hope is that natural language processing can help acquire knowledge and organize it. And this is focusing specifically on literature that's published on PubMed. And so as you know, you might have experienced yourself as clinicians or as researchers, you can appreciate that there's more and more studies that get published every day, and it gets harder and harder to keep up to date. And so can we use NLP to acquire all of the knowledge that's being published? Another type of application is, can we help patients when they get, let's say, a diagnosis of a disease? Can we help patients in particular by providing them with access to information online? But not only access to any health information online, but also that is tailored to their medical condition. And not only that, that's also tailored to their particular information needs. This is a really interesting active research field it's not clear that providing information to patients can always help. It's more likely that it's going to help if the information is relevant to both their information needs, and by that I mean what they want to learn, but also how much they can handle. And so in here, there's a lot of questions about health literacy and health communication, and it's a fascinating type of problem to think about. And NLP here is only one aspect of the problem. Obviously, there's a lot of health communication and public health issues in here, but NLP can play a big role. Another application is clinical discovery. And so if you think of the electronic health record as a giant repository of information about individual patients, you can think of NLP and data mining or data science as a way to help discover patterns about patient populations. So for example, we could be looking for associations between symptoms to discover new conditions, or we could be trying to study the effectiveness of different treatments by seeing how the disease course of one population under one treatment fares against the disease course of other populations under other treatments. But in order to do that, we can't just look for patterns in the structured part of the electronic health record. We also have to pay attention to the text, all the notes and reports entered by physicians, because they contain a lot of nuanced and subtle information, but yet essential information to clinical care. Finally, a last example of how NLP can help for medicine and health relates to clinical decision making. And imagine yourself in the following scenario: you are treating an individual patient and you are interacting with the electronic health record. If there is a decision support system as part of the electronic health record, the NLP tool can help extract information that would be valuable information and valuable input into the decision support system. So another example would be alarming the physician that there's a possible allergy for a particular treatment. If the allergy is entered only in the notes, hopefully that's not the case, but it could happen, then NLP can help with that. So what I'm going to do now for the rest of this lecture is focus on a particular task, which is a low-level technological task, but it's one that's basically needed for all of these high-level applications I've just talked about, and it's called information extraction. And it's, again, it's kind of like the stepping stone for all of the applications, so it's a nice application to look at just because it's going to allow us to go through all of the different steps that an NLP system has to go through, and we're going to go through each step and each of the challenges that are entailed in each step. So information extraction deals with locating and structuring specific information in text. So imagine we have a patient record, and here I'm taking an anonymized extract of a sample of a note. It's from a discharge summary. And so what you notice here, the little brackets with stars and hospital are just anonymized. That's why it looks a little bit funny. But our task here is, if we were to give this piece of text to a computer, could it help? Could it help us answer questions like, how many patients in my institution come in with shortness of breath on any given day? Or can I identify all the patients that had a particular condition, like a heart attack? Okay? So the first step is to recognize the named entities. And named entities is a technical term here to denote things like diseases, symptoms, drugs, procedures. And so this would be the output of the first step of the information extraction step. So we have 43-year-old female with history of GERD, woke up with shortness of breath and left upper extremity discomfort one day prior to admission. She presented, etc., etc. She was ruled out for a myocardial infarct by enzymes, etc. She developed shortness of breath again and shoulder pain during the test. So what you're able to do after this step, and I'm not going into the details about how the the step was implemented. I'm just focusing on the input and the output here. You notice that some conditions are present and they're in red, and some diagnostic procedures are present, but in this particular sample, there hasn't been any therapeutic procedures or any other semantic type being talked about. Okay, so what are the challenges here? Well, obviously, the first question is, how did the computer know that GERD, the string GERD, was a condition, whereas stress test here, which is a multi-word phrase, so there's two words in this phrase, are not a condition, but rather a diagnostic procedure. And the way to do so is to rely on terminologies and ontologies. And so I believe you've already heard about the UMLS. And if you think of the UMLS as a large taxonomy of concepts, of semantic concepts, you would know that stress test belongs to the semantic type diagnostic procedure. And so as the text, as the NLP tool goes and parses the text, we can try to match any phrase against the UMLS, for example, or a subset of the UMLS, and determine if a particular phrase belongs to a particular semantic type. An additional question might be, well, what about this phrase here, LUE, discomfort, which actually is not in the UMLS, and yet an information extraction system would be able to recognize that. So again, the problem here is that if we say that our algorithm is to go through text and match anything we see against the UMLS, maybe we're going to miss important symptoms that for some reason are not part of the UMLS. And so the way to handle this is to rely on context and syntax. And here I'm being very, very vague. That's about the level of information that I want to provide to you. You can notice here that if I say, woke up with SOB, which happens to be in the UMLS, and something else, we're putting a coordination between a conjunction between two different phrases here. And if so, and if one of them is in fact a symptom, then the second one also has to be a symptom. So what I'm saying here is that we can implement some heuristics and we can implement some knowledge that's not coming from a terminology, but that can help us disambiguate further the language in here. And so the way to encode these rules would be to look at the context, the words around the different phrases of interest, but also the syntax. Okay, the second step is, once we identify that GERD relates to a condition and therefore has to be a named entity, how can we normalize the entity? That is, how can we map them to semantic concepts in an ontology? So in this case, we can say that GERD maps to concept 17168, which has a preferred term in the UMLS for gastroesophageal reflux disease, whereas stress test maps to exercise stress test. So obviously, once we have the link to the UMLS, it sounds like it should be fairly straightforward, but it's not always that straightforward. And one huge challenge here is, again, ambiguity of language. So let's look in particular at this string here, PTA, which as humans, and especially as humans who are used to reading clinical notes, we can easily disambiguate to mean prior to admission. So basically, here's a sentence says, a 43-year-old female came in, but she had had shortness of breath and discomfort one day prior to admission. But if we go into the UMLS, we can find that there's actually quite a lot of concepts that correspond to that acronym. So PTA could be post-traumatic amnesia, could also be percutaneous transluminal angioplasty, or even parent-teacher association, which I'm not sure why it's in the UMLS, but it is. And so how did we identify that not only it was not a condition, but it was none of these different concepts? So it was also not a test or an organization. And again here, looking only at the UMLS, having rules that say if matches UMLS concept X, then map it to concept X is not going to work just because there are too many of them. And actually, in our case, none of them fit. And so instead, we again want to rely on context. So looking at words around a particular phrase of interest comes again as being very handy. So one day PTA, it's very likely that if there is a term X day or the word day next to PTA, then it's not, we're not talking about percutaneous transluminal angioplasty or parent-teacher association. So how do we encode, you know, I'm being very vague here when I say we rely on context, and as humans it kind of makes sense because that's also how we do it, but the way that it's actually encoded is all related to statistical patterns, and so I'm not going into too much detail, but I strongly encourage you to take another class to learn more about all of this. Okay, so next for same for another example, we have here the term enzyme here, and so the sentence is, she was ruled out for MI by enzymes. And if you just look up in the UMLS enzyme, you would find very easily a fit, which would be just the word enzyme. But here instead, it's not used as enzyme, but instead we would want to map it to a clinical enzyme test, which is a very different semantic type and a very different semantic concept. So once again, we're relying on context here to do this type of disambiguation. I should also add that this is, you know, I'm doing a little bit of wishful thinking here. There are very few systems in place right now that are able to do this type of disambiguation. And you can appreciate how difficult it is if you want to scale this type of problem to all the different concepts that appear in the UMLS. Okay, so let's move on to the next step in information extraction task, which is, it might not be enough to identify the named entities like MI, enzyme, etc. We also want to be able to identify the modifiers associated with an entity. And so, for example, reflux disease has one temporal modifier, which is history of. And it's important to note that because maybe the person does not have reflux disease right now or does not have an exacerbation of reflux disease, but has had this condition for quite some time now. One day PTA is also a temporal modifier for SOB, and as well as for LUE discomfort. And left upper extremity discomfort has in itself a particular modifier, which is an anatomical modifier, left upper extremity. Myocardial infarct has an interesting and important type of modifier, which is a negation. In fact, the presence of myocardial infarct does not mean that the patient has it. In this example, the patient does not have an MI, and that was determined thanks to an enzyme test. So you can imagine that if we say our querying our database of patients in the electronic health record and are looking for the prevalence of myocardial infarct, say, by relying only on the notes, it's important to pay attention to the negation modifiers because we don't want to count this particular patient, at least at this time, as having had a myocardial infarct. So what are the challenges here? Well, the first one is, how do we know which types of modifiers to pay attention to? And this is a question that's not a technological question, it's more of a task analysis question. Some are obvious, we always want to capture them, such as negation. Others are not always needed, and really depend on the question you're asking yourself and why you're using the NLP tool. And so maybe it's not that important to pay attention to anatomical location, whereas in a different type of application, you would really, really want to pay attention to anatomical location. Another example is who the experiencer of condition is. And so this is particularly important when we want to distinguish between are we talking about the patient or are we talking about a family member in the family history section of a particular note. Okay, the next step in the information extraction step is to identify the relations that are among the entities. So the most obvious one here is she was ruled out for MI by enzymes. And so it's interesting to know that, to notice that there is a relationship between the heart attack or the lack of heart attack and the enzyme test. So in this case, the relation would be enzyme is a test used to rule out the MI, whereas shortness of breath, at least the second one in our little sample here, occurred during the stress test. Another one which is a little bit more linguistic in nature and yet quite essential for any NLP application is to identify what's called coreference relations. And so here what I mean by that is, for example, when I refer to something like she developed SOB and shoulder pain during the test here is actually a reference to an entity that was already mentioned in the note, which is the stress test. And so identifying automatically that stress test and test refer to the same entity is an important task, because let's say we want to enumerate all the different tests that a patient goes through, we don't want to equate that to the different mentions of test. Obviously, we're going to be referring to a same test several times, and we want to be able to map all of those to a single entity. So what are the different types of challenges? Again, there's this very task analysis dependent challenge, which is what type of relations am I actually interested in extracting? And how do I then go about recognizing them in text? So one easy way to do it is to look at, again, patterns of usage. So if it says something like X during Y, or ruled out for X by Y, or Y ruled out X, we can kind of identify what possible potential relations there could be between the concepts X and Y. There is another type of relations that happen, which are also quite interesting to look at, which are implicit relationships. So if you think of pharmacovigilance as an application, for example, the goal there is to identify adverse drug events from the electronic health record, say. And so what we'd like to do is to note that a particular event always happens or happens with a high frequency after a particular drug was administered to a patient. It's clear there's very rarely, at least, going to be any explicit mention that says the patient developed a side effect of this drug and developed a rash, for example. And so instead, we have to assume that there's going to be an implicit relationship between the adverse drug event and the drug, and we have to identify that one. And so the way it's been done so far is to rely on statistical models to find patterns of occurrences and kind of ignore the way the text is written, because there's no such explicit relation mentioned in the text. Okay, so as we went through this example of how to go from a raw text from a note and identifying named entities, their modifiers, the relationships among them, among the different entities, I've been talking about a few things. One of them is that it seems like relying on keywords or combination of keywords is not going to be enough to capture meaning of text. And if you think about it, it makes complete sense. A text or language is not a bag of words, right? And so if I say Paul loves Mary, it means something very different than if I said Mary loves Paul. And it's the same in clinical NLP. If I say there is no MI, it means something very different from there is MI and no something else. So what are the types of knowledge that we need to rely on then, if we can't only rely on keywords or a combination of keywords? Well, one of them is a lexicon or a terminology or something that's part of an ontology. And so the UMLS is one that clinical NLP tools rely heavily on. And we've seen some examples in the previous slides. Another one are what's called syntactic grammars, and they allow us to identify things like, if there's a negation, what is the scope of the negation? So if I say ruled out MI, I know that MI is under the scope of the negation intended by the term ruled out. We also can figure out things like what is the subject of a sentence, etc., etc. Where do we have a conjunction between two symptoms? And so that's extremely helpful. I'm not going into details here about how one might go about developing these syntactic grammars and how one might go about mapping an input text to a syntactic grammar, and that process is called parsing. But again, I'm focusing only on the types of knowledge that you would require here. The last one is what's called a semantic grammar. So if I identify that whenever it says history of X, history of is a modifier that has to do with temporality, that's a semantic type of knowledge. And in order to identify all of these different modifiers, we need to rely on such knowledge bases. So those are the linguistic knowledges, the lexicon, the syntactic grammars, the semantic grammars. And you heard me talk quite a lot about data science, patterns of usage, looking at statistical model. And so all of this data-derived knowledge is becoming more and more relevant for NLP tools. And that allows us, in a way, in a very surprising way, to handle ambiguity. So what are the challenges for clinical NLP? I mean, we went through a few of the linguistic challenges, in part the fact that language and clinical language is highly ambiguous. There are, for example, many acronyms like PTA that could be mapped with many things. There are things that are not handled by the UMLS that we still need to recognize, etc., etc. Others are the following. One of them is that clinicians often, nowadays at least, type their own notes. And as we all know, clinicians are very rushed for their time. And so they end up writing notes that are quite telegraphic in their styles. And even though it's already better than having to read handwritten notes, it still comes in with its set of challenges. There are many, many more acronyms, which increases the ambiguity of language, but there are also a lot of typos. And so obviously relying on dictionary methods like looking up a term in the UMLS, if there's a lot of typos, is not going to work most of the time. And so while it's understandable and it's easier to enter for clinicians to just type their own notes, it heavily increases the semantic ambiguity and the noise of these notes and makes it harder for clinical NLP tools to parse. Another challenge, which is interesting and also makes sense if you think about language as a sociological phenomenon, is that there are sub-languages within different specialties. And so a psychological note is going to have a very different type of semantics and discourse than, let's say, a cardiological note. And so some concepts, and this has to do with the semantic ambiguity, some concepts, some words in a psychological note are going to mean very differently than in a cardiology note. Finally, and this is a really, really important challenge, and hopefully there's a lot of progress being done on it, but we're not there yet, is that there's no gold standard out there for evaluating natural language processing tools. The main reason for it is that we're dealing with clinical texts which have all of the privacy element to it. And so it's impossible for different NLP research teams to exchange data sets. And so as such, if I'm at Columbia and I develop a really great NLP tool, I can't really know how well it's doing on different institutions' data set. Because we're also dealing with data and statistical model, we also cannot easily share the tools themselves, because part of the implementation of these tools is to keep little examples of text in the tools. And so that would also violate privacy rules. So how to go about that? Why do we need gold standards for evaluating these NLP tools? That's the way technology has been going all along, is that each research team can't do it all on their own, and there needs to be some sharing happening. It's just really hard to do in the clinical NLP realm. So as we talked about that problem of sharing, another problem is obviously, how do I go about knowing anyway? Let's say I can share my data set or my tool with someone else. How do I know that I actually do a good job at parsing or identifying concepts or things like that? So the field of evaluation in general is a very large field, and evaluation science, as you already know, we'll learn throughout this program, is quite important. When it comes to NLP system, the particular questions we want to answer are twofold. The first one is, does it work on its own? And we refer to this as intrinsic evaluation. So if I have an NLP tool, is it doing what it has to do? But the second one, which is sometimes a little bit harder and trickier to assess, is, let's say I have a perfect NLP tool. Does it help my overall application? And so, in other words, can I perform my task better now? So it's very much called a task-based evaluation. So let's go through each of them. The intrinsic evaluation, we're looking at the tool itself and we're breaking it down. So for example, the information, let's say our tool was information extraction, we had all these different steps. We want to evaluate the quality of each step. Are we good at recognizing the named entities? Are we good at normalizing them? Are we good at identifying modifiers or relationships amongst named entities? And how do we go about evaluating them? Well, we rely on gold standards. So a gold standard is composed of many examples of these named entities. Let's say I'm using still the information extraction example. And domain experts, so in our case clinicians, go and identify these named entities in the context of text. And we obviously want to keep track of reliability among experts. We want to make sure that our gold standard is actually golden, that is, the information in there is both valid and reliable. And we need to keep in mind, as we build this type of gold standard, that it comes at a high cost, because we're going to ask of domain experts to perform a task, and so it's going to be time consuming, it's going to take a lot of money. And it's also a difficult task. It's not always an easy task for clinicians because it's not a task that comes naturally to clinicians. You know, clinicians don't think in terms of, did I recognize this named entity? Did I map it correctly to the semantic type disease, for example? And so it takes a lot of effort to build these gold standards. At the same time, we want to have enough examples so that when I compare different versions of my tool, or I compare my tool to a baseline tool, I have enough statistical power to say that on my gold standard, my tool performs better. There are a few metrics, standard metrics out there in order to compare the tool output against the gold standard. And I'm just mentioning them here. I don't require you to know them, but again, if you want to learn more about it, I encourage you to take other classes in the program to learn about them. So one of them is accuracy, specificity, sensitivity, you know about them, precision and recall, you might have not heard of before. They all are different ways to count how many true positives, true negatives, etc., are between the tool output and the gold standard. The task-based evaluation is again, the question here is, can the NLP system help answer the overall clinical application or the clinical task? And there's no established design about how to perform a task-based evaluation because obviously it heavily depends on the task. And so the one question, for example, would be, let's say I'm evaluating an information extraction system. I want to situate it now, and let's say my information extraction system is particularly good from an intrinsic point of view. Now I want to know, is it helpful in identifying emergency department admission notes to detect flu epidemics? And so here maybe one metric of evaluation would be the time it took for the tool to identify all the notes, as opposed to compared to how much it would take through a manual review, a manual chart review. And so the metrics of evaluation are quite different in a task-based and in an intrinsic-based evaluation. Okay, so in conclusion, I guess the main thing I want you to remember is that natural language processing is a critical tool for the electronic health record. As there's more and more information entered into the patient record, there's a need to organize, aggregate, synthesize information conveyed in the narrative part of the electronic health record. There's a whole debate ongoing right now in health informatics about, do we actually want to keep physicians away from writing narrative, and do we want to have them instead rely on templates? And this brings a lot of standardization into the electronic health record. The trend, however, has been that while templates are extremely useful, physicians can't help but have to enter free text into the electronic health record, because not everything can be structured. And it makes sense from a linguistic standpoint. As we talk, not everything can be mapped to a very precise data structure. That's a nature of language. It's ambiguous, it's subtle. And so the NLP part of the technology in health informatics, the goal of this is to help identify in the free text what is the salient information, so that humans can be supported in their different activities while relying on the electronic health record. I also want you to keep in mind that clinical NLP is an active field of research, and so that means that as a consumer, as a user of clinical NLP, one has to always be reminded that there is no standard tool yet for NLP-based analysis that is guaranteed to work across institutions, across vendor EHRs, etc. But you know, I don't want it to leave it at a very pessimistic note anyway, and I also want to point out that there's been major progress made in the recent years, and so we're getting closer and closer to a standardized NLP-based analysis. We're just not there yet. And so for all of that reason, it's really good as consumers of NLP to keep in mind what the challenges are, and to keep in mind why is it that you would want to use NLP in the EHR, as it's very, very dependent. I also want to go about what I didn't discuss in this lecture, how to implement an NLP tool. I did not go into any detail, any technical detail in there, how to deploy the NLP tool into a clinical information system, which comes with a whole set of fascinating questions. If you want to know more, I encourage you once again in taking other classes. I also point you out to the chapter called Natural Language Processing for Biomedicine and Health that I co-authored with Carol Friedman, and it's upcoming in the fourth edition of the textbook Biomedical Informatics from Shortleaf and Cimino. Thank you.